Sausage. Okay, perfect. So I'll first start with mortgages. We all know what mortgages are. A mortgage is just a loan that people use to buy a house. So if you need to buy a home, what you need to do is to get a mortgage. And I've seen many people say that rent is better than paying mortgages, that they prefer to rent. I've seen so many people, especially in white people. I know we Africans have a culture about having a house, but I've seen even Nigerians talk about they rather rent than buy a house. The truth is, there's nothing like having your own home. It gives you so many advantages. One, privacy. Do you want your landlord to keep coming in to check your homes? They still do that even in Canada. And two, you build equity in your house. So if you have a mortgage, as you pay it down, you're building equity in your house. If you decide to sell the house, you're going to make a lot of money. And thirdly, do you just want to pay somebody else's mortgage or do you want to pay your own mortgage? So, with those few points, I can totally. Please, can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I mean, if you have any question or you think you can hear me, let me know, please. So, as I said, it's important. If you're not thinking about buying your house, I think this is the right time to think about buying one. It's very, very important. And most importantly now, rates are down. The rates are the lowest you can see in the last couple of years. In the last 10 years, I don't think mortgages have gone this low. It's fantastic. You can get a mortgage for like 1.7, 1.8% on a 5-year term, which is fantastic. And I tell people, this is the advantage. God will guide every one of us to make that decision. It's a tough decision, I know, but we all have to close our eyes, pay the sacrifices, and get the mortgage. So let me go back to what a mortgage is. So on my slide, I told you what the mortgage is. A mortgage is a type of loan often used to buy a home or other property. So other property could be a rental property, it could be an investment property. So I know people who buy houses to sell. Especially now, I have so many of my clients coming in to say, oh, I need to get a mortgage because prices are low right now. I'll buy the house. I'm paying you a little interest. And in the next 3, 4, 5 years, I can sell the house and make 50,000, 60,000 out of it. And so it doesn't mean that because you already have a house, you can't buy another house. Oh, definitely you can. And because you're renting the house, we consider the income you make from the rentals. So even if you're not able to qualify, we can look at the rental income you make, and that will help you to qualify for a mortgage for the rental property. A mortgage allows the lender to take possession of the property if you don't repay the loan on time. Yeah, part of the rules about mortgages that whoever is lending you has the authority if you don't pay to take over the property. So, meaning the property is just the security to the loan. We don't need you to drop your car or drop another house to secure this house. The same house you're buying will be the collateral for your mortgage. Now, how do you qualify for a mortgage? Simple, very easy. What I tell people, if you have income, yes, you can qualify. The most important thing is to have income. You might not be able to qualify for what you want, but at least that's a start point. We do have a lot of tools that you can use to pre-qualify yourself right from your home. If you go into Google and just put qualify for a mortgage, it's going to show you lots of tools. All you just have to do is put your income, and it will give you approximately what you can buy. After you get to that stage, you know the amount and you're interested. Oh, I'll be very willing to help you to get a mortgage. So, how do you qualify? To qualify for a mortgage, you have to prove to your lender that you can afford the amount you're asking for. Nobody wants to give you a loan that you can't pay for. I mean, I know dealers, if you go to buy a car, you can buy a car of any amount. They will allow you because they don't care. But when it comes to a house, it's a more, you know, you can't compare the price of a car to the price of a house. So it's more important for us to look at, can you qualify to make these payments? Because nobody wants to give you the loan and sell the house at a later time. We want to make sure that you buy the house that you can continue paying for. So that's why it's important. We will consider information such as your income. So usually, Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. But your mic is like chopping in and out. Is it plugged in properly?
Okay, let me see. I didn't use a mic. I'm actually using the mic of the... Give me a second. Let's see.
So, just want to make sure we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir.
It's better.
Okay, good. So let me just go back to how to qualify for a mortgage. So I said to qualify for a mortgage, we have to prove that you can afford the amount you're asking for, because we don't want to give you a mortgage that you cannot afford. So affordability is the most important thing when it comes to a mortgage. The amount is a big volume of getting a mortgage. Is the amount of a house is way more than when we're talking about buying a car. So that's important that we have to look at that you can afford the house you want to buy. So these are the information we usually ask for, your income. So your income, we want to know what your current income is, and we want to compare it with what your annual income is. So what we ask, your pay stub, we ask for your current pay stub, and then we ask for your notice of assessment or your T4 so that we can know what your annual income is compared with what your current income is. We've seen situations where people actually are earning more this year than what they earned last year. So we're still going to use the income this year. We just want to compare it with what last year was. And then the second thing is we want to look at your expenses. How much are you paying for your living costs, your utilities? We just want to be sure that after we take out all your expenses out, the money you have left, you can use it to afford to pay the mortgage. Then we consider the amount you're borrowing. So based on what you're going to put as your down payment, we look at how much do you need to borrow from the bank. Because let's say you're buying a house of $500,000. We look at how much you want to put in down payment, $50,000. Then the bank will give you $450,000. Then we consider what your debts are. Do you have a credit card? What's the balance on your credit card? Do you have a car loan? What's the balance? Do you have a student loan? What's the balance on that? And then we look at your credit report and your scores. This is one of the most important things. Your credit score is very important. You need to make sure that if you're planning to buy a house, that you try to build your credit score well. Because right now, especially if you're going to go for an insurance on their own, let's say you're putting 5% down payment down, then it's very important that you have a good credit score. The other thing we also consider is the amortization period. How many years do you want to pay off the mortgage? Maximum is 25 years if you're putting a 5% down payment. And it can go as high as 30 years if you're putting more than 20% or above down as your down payment. So amortization could be 30 years. And you can also decide to pay off in 10 years. It depends on how much you want to pay your mortgage fast as what you want. So we can do anything you want for you. Other things we'll also consider is what your total monthly housing costs are. So there are ratios that we use when we're qualifying you. The first ratio is we call the GDS ratios. So the GDS ratio is what we call gross debt service ratio. It's to look at how much are you going to be paying for your mortgage and other things related to the house, like your mortgage payments, property taxes, eating. And if it's a condo, we look at 50% of the condo fees. We don't want that to be more than 32% of what your income is. So if you make an income of 100,000, you cannot pay more than 32,000 in a year into those costs that I spoke about. Or else we have to reduce your mortgage amount a bit. The only exemption to that is if you are putting 20% or above into your down payment, then we can even do 50% of that because that is not insured. I will talk about insured and non-insured later, but let's just go through this one by one. The next ratio that we also look at is what we call your total debt load. The bank makes sure that all your debts, you must not be paying more than 40% of whatever your gross income is. So let's say you're earning 100,000, you can't pay more than 40,000 a year on all your debt. And the reason is the bank knows that you might have a family, you have other expenses. So we want to make sure that the 60% remaining should be used for other costs. There are also exemptions to that. At times we go as high as 44%, we go as high as 50-55, depending on how much you're putting as down payment. So what the bank wants to look at is what is the risk? If you're putting 20% down, you're putting $100,000 into a house of $500,000. The bank knows that even if we sell the house, we'll definitely sell the house for $400,000. So we don't really care. We can bend some of those rules for you. But if you're only putting 5% down, especially now that prices of homes are going so fast down, we don't want a situation that we give you a loan of $400,000 and then the house that we want to even sell is $350,000, then the bank is in trouble. And that's why we put those rules so that we don't stress you unnecessarily. So other debts could be your credit card payments, car payments, line of credit, student loans, spousal or child support, and any other debts, no matter what the debts are. As long as it's in your credit file, we'll be able to pull it and see those debts. And then we will be able to reduce your mortgage or at least make it work with what you can afford. So after all this, how do you get a pre-approval? So if you look at all these things and you think this is the time, I mean, pre-approvals are not final. So if you come to see me or see any other banker and you do a pre-approval, it doesn't mean that you must buy a house. So a pre-approval is just something to show that this is the amount you can qualify for. And once you know the amount, you can go outside and start looking for a house in that range. So I do encourage anybody that's been planning or thinking about buying a house. I think this is a good time to think about going for a pre-approval. If you do the pre-approval and the amount you're qualified for is not what you want, you can at least know what you need to work at. Maybe you have to increase your down payment. Maybe you have to get a second job. Maybe you need to push your manager to increase your salary a bit for you. Anything can work, but the best thing is to start. If you don't start, you won't go anywhere. So the most important thing is, I tell everyone, get a pre-approval. And from there, you know what you need to work on. If it's your credit we need to work on, then we can start building your credit along the way. There's so many ways we can build your credit for you, even if you think your credit is not so good. There are so many ways we can help to build your credit. And it's so fast. Some we can get resolved within 2-3 months and your credit is fantastic and we can go ahead after that. So getting a pre-approval, I list the list of items you need. Your identification, most importantly, your proof of employment. So proof of employment is just your pay stub and maybe a letter of employment if your pay has been increased recently. Let's say you got a promotion yesterday. I can use the promotion letter to qualify you for a mortgage and all that. We need information about your other assets. So majorly what we look at is your assets and your liabilities. The more assets you have, the better it is for us to qualify you for a bigger mortgage. So one of the things that can help us increase the amount you can qualify for is your assets. So they are important. And it doesn't matter if the assets are in Nigeria or the assets are here. We just want to know what assets. And the reason why those assets are important, we want to see that this person can manage finances, most importantly. So when we see your age and we see you're 35 years old, you have assets worth 10 million, then we look, I'm just giving that as an example. It could be 2,000, it could be 3,000, it could be 4,000. But that's, we just want to see that this person can save. That's one of the things that helps us with our exemptions. Other things we need is information about your debts or financial obligations, proof of employment, proof of current salary, your position and length of time with your organization, notice of assessment from Canada Revenue Agency for the past 2 years. The reason why we ask for 2 years is if you have a revolving income. So if you're somebody who works with variable income, you get bonuses, you work variable hours, then we want to get an average of the last 2 years. And that's why we'll ask for 2 years. Or let's say you're a business person. If you're a business person, we know businesses are not constant income. You can make 200,000 this year, you can make 500 next year, but we can't use the 500. We have to use the average of the last 2 years to qualify you for what you can afford. And then we need the proof of your down payments. So this is one of the most important part. Down payments are very, very important. And usually we ask for history of your down payment because we don't want you to just go and meet Mr. B or Mr. Lagbaja and tell him, borrow me 200,000 so I can use it for down payment, you know, and keep it in your account just to lie to us. We want to see proof that you have the down payment. Definitely you can borrow down payment. Yes, you can. And I will explain it as we go forward. Then we have, we also need to know about your credit card balances, limits, spousal support amount. So if you get spousal support, for instance, we can also use your spousal support as an income. If you also get child benefit, recently my bank now accepts child benefit. So if you have child benefits as well, we can use that as an income as well to qualify you for a mortgage. Then we want to know about your car loans, leases, lines of credit, student loans, and any other loan that you have. Down payments. This is the most important part. So I want to go deeply into down payment so we can look at it. And I'll give you various options in which we can generate our down payment. I've seen people who came to meet me the first day, they have no down payments. And we started, we put a plan together to get them a down payment. And within 3-4 months, we're able to get them a mortgage. So don't feel like, oh, where would I get 10,000 from? Where would I get 15,000? I think the decision is in your heart. You decide if you want to buy a house, and every other constraints can be managed easily. Down payment is what is your portion of the equity that you're putting down. So minimum down payment in Canada is 5%. So we expect you at the minimum 5% of the house you want to buy. If I want to buy a house for 500,000, then I need to have $25,000 that I will put down as my own down payment at the minimum. Apart from that, there are closing costs, which I will also explain later to you. But the most important thing the bank wants to see is your down payment. Your down payment could be 5%. So if you're putting a 5% down payment down, now, as I said earlier, the bank wants to be sure that you can afford to pay the house. So if you're putting 5% down or less than 20%, the bank has to insure your mortgage. The insurance is not for you. The insurance is for the bank, even though you're paying for it. So I tell people, if you can afford not to pay that insurance, it's better. But I'd rather say somebody to put the 5% down and buy a house than be paying somebody else's mortgage by renting. So if it's a 5% you can afford, come. We will overcome the insurance. So if you put 5%, we have to get you an insurance. Insurance is that if you don't pay, the insurance company will pay the bank and the bank won't chase you. But the insurance will chase you to pay the money back. But the bank will discharge you completely as if there's nothing, because the bank has received their own money. They will walk away. Now it's the insurance that will now start pushing you. And if you don't pay, insurance can decide to sell the house and give you the balance you've saved or in your equity in the house. So I don't pray that will be a portion of anybody, because it's not usually a wonderful story. But most importantly, buying a house is a good gift. And I pray that God, whoever has that decision to buy that good gift, God will help us to do it. So as I said, so if you put 20% down, you don't have to put any insurance, no insurance. Insurance for a 500,000 house will be about 20 to 25,000. You're not going to pay that outrightly, but we will add it to your mortgage and spread it for the 25 years you're going to be paying the home. But if you can afford to put 20% down, you will save that 20, 25,000, which is a good savings if you can. So sources of down payments. You can add the source from your bank account. So it could be money you've saved over time. It could even be money you have in Nigeria that you can bring in. As long as you have proof that the money is coming in from Nigeria, we will still accept it as a source of down payment. The only thing is, we want it to be at least for 30 days before you buy the house. You can use investment accounts, your RSPs, your TFSAs, your unregistered accounts. All of them can be used for your down payment. Also, you can use gifts. So your dad can give you a gift. Gifts can be any amount. So your uncle, your brother can give you a gift. So even if you can't afford to pay, you can talk to your parents if they can afford that money for you. Or even your friend, your very close friend, at times we'll fight exemptions to take friends. Usually we prefer immediate family members. But if you have a friend that is ready to do it, we can get an exemption for you to get your friend to give you a gift. There's a gift certificate they have to sign. It's just a sheet of paper. They will just sign and that's all. You can use sale of real estate. So if you have a house before, let's say you have a condo and you want to buy a big house, you can use the proceeds from the sales of the condo to do your down payment as well. You can use unsecured credit. So you can even use your line of credit and all that as that. The only thing about that is the payment of the line of credit will add it as part of your debt. So that might reduce what your mortgage amount will be. But surely you can also use that. You can use proceeds from business or your company as well. You can use the affordable housing program. I don't know if many of us know about the affordable housing program. It's a fantastic program. I almost went with that program. So what they do is they help you get down payment. Actually, all you do is put $1,000. They will get the remaining down payment for you. But they will get it back from you if you sell the house later or after the 25 years at a percentage of what your house is worth at that point. They've been around for years now. So it's a good opportunity. If anybody needs question on how to go about that, you can contact me anytime and I can guide you now to go through that. So all you need is $1,000 for your down payment and they will give you the rest. So as long as you have income to qualify, that's a fantastic way to look at it. The other one is the first-time home buyer incentive, which just started September last year. That's also a fantastic program. This is directly from the government, and I will talk in details about that later. Then we have inheritances and trust funds, etc. The sources are unlimited. As long as you can get money from one source or the other, we can work around it to make it work for the mortgage. So I'll go briefly through the first-time home buyer's incentive. This is a new program, as I told you, started in September last year. I feel it's a fantastic program. Even if you can afford a 5%, you can still go ahead with this program, and this program can help you reduce how much your monthly payment will be. So as I said, this program allows you, you can only use it if you're a first-time home buyer. So if you have already had a house before, you cannot use this program. So if it's your first house you're buying in Canada, you can use the program. Or if you've had a house in Canada that you have sold over 4 years ago, then you can still qualify for this program. So What the program does is you put 5% down minimum. You must put the 5%. If you're buying a new house, they can put up to 5% or 10% in your down payment. So let's say you're putting 25,000, they can put another 25,000 or 50,000, depending. If it's a new house, you can get up to 50,000. If it's an old house, you can get up to 25,000. And when you put that, you know what happens? It reduces your insurance, reduces your mortgage amount, and reduces your monthly payments. So that way it's more affordable for you. If you are meant to pay $1,500 in your mortgage payments biweekly, you can get it with this to like $1,200 for you. So you save $300 on it. But remember, government gives nothing free. So the most important thing about this is the government owns an equity of whatever percentage they are giving you. If it's 5%, they own 5% of your home. If it's 10%, they actually own 10% of your home. But I still see it as a good favor. I mean, at least it's better than going to borrow a loan from the bank and paying it. This is a cheaper way. So, but the clause is this. If you sell your house, they get 10% or 5% back. So if you buy a house 500,000 today and you sell it 700,000 tomorrow, they are not getting 25,000 they gave you. They're getting the percentage of how much you sell the house. So they believe that their own money too will have grown in your equity too. But I still feel it's simple. I mean, if somebody borrows you that kind of money, they will collect more interest for 25 years. If you sell the house, or if after 25 years. So what I do tell people is you don't have to wait till 25 years. Once you can afford to pay the government out, all you need to do is we reassess the value of the house and you can pay off the government anytime. So you don't have to wait for years when your house has really appreciated. That's then is when you pay the government. So you can, after 3 years, I can revalue the house and just pay the government's equity out of it. And then you're free out of that. Good. The other thing I want to talk about is RSP home buyers plan. I'm sure most of us will have been familiar about it. So for your first time home buyers as well, if you have an RSP that you're putting money into, and that's why I tell people, if you're planning to buy a house 2-3 years, start putting money into your RSP, because that way you can reduce your taxable income and use the same money that you have put in your RSP to use it as your down payment. And you can use up to $35,000 as your down payment. Imagine if you and your wife are both, you both have an RSP and you built up to $35,000. That's $70,000 that you can use for down payment. So you don't have to even look for money elsewhere. You can just use that old money to buy it. There comes a clause there, because the government feels you are borrowing the money from your RSP. So even it's your money, but you're still borrowing it from your RSP, because what the government wants to provide for you is that at retirement, your RSP should be money that you can use to, I mean, to make needs met at that point in your life. So the government wants you to contribute back the money within 15 years. So you have 15 years, if you take 5,000, within 15 years, you have to recontribute the money back. If you don't do that, each year, the amount you need to contribute, the government will add it into your taxable income and you pay taxes on it. So it's understandable, and I see a support in that, because the government doesn't want you to use the money and then later in future, you don't have money on RSP and then you'll be dependent on the government again. Okay. Options to your mortgage. We do have two types of mortgages you can have. We know about the traditional mortgages. This is the most common one that people are very familiar with. You get a mortgage, and as you pay it down, your mortgage reduces till you pay it off, and then your house becomes yours forever. We have another option, which is what we call the home equity line of credit, which most people are not familiar with. I see it as a very fantastic product if you are conservative. If you're not the spendthrift or the one that doesn't like seeing money in the account, and then that might not be a good product for you. It's like a line of credit that allows you to, so let's say you put the down payment, as you pay down your mortgage, that amount to be available for you in a line of credit so that if there's any emergency, you can borrow money at a cheaper interest rate. So usually I do this for clients that, let's say you travel and then you put money on your credit cards. Credit cards are 19%. You don't want to keep money on your credit card for over a month. So what you do is you can put it into the line of credit till you pay. And that line of credit could be at 2%, 3% interest rate, which is fantastic. Rather than paying 200%, you're paying 3%. I think it's a good product. So, but you have to be conservative. Else, as you are paying down your mortgage, the money that is available in line of credit, you're spending it again. And then you're going nowhere. You're just putting money into your mortgage and taking it out. That means you're just paying interest to the bank. So it's not advisable if you know you're not conservative. After all this, how do you now buy a house? So finding a home, I titled this. So after you get a pre-approval, the next thing to do is to find a realtor. Or I gave three options here. You have an option to buy directly from builder. So you can actually go to a builder without even having a realtor and telling the builder that you want to buy this house, going through the agreement, signing those agreements and bringing it to us. People do this because they want to avoid paying the realtor fees. Well, you question me that, when you're buying a house, you don't pay the realtor fees. Yeah, true, you don't. But whoever is selling will pay the realtor. And when they pay the realtor, you are still paying because they will add it to what you are buying the house, whether you like it or not. But the advantages to using a realtor, so I don't want to badmouth what the realtor's work is. I used a realtor when I bought my own even new house. Why? Because the realtor will help you negotiate. So you might not be able to negotiate as much as how the realtor will help you negotiate. So that's the job of a realtor. Then you can also buy directly from a friend. So I can decide to do a private sales. You see a friend who wants to sell his house and you can do an agreement together and buy directly from that friend. And then you don't pay the realtor and the friend who is selling to will not pay any realtor fees as long as you agree with the amount and then we'll do that. There are exemptions to that we have to get, but it's doable as well. After you see a realtor, you find a house, you sign the agreement, and then you bring the agreement back to the bank. And at this point, the bank will just check the house. We will do an appraisal of the house. Why? Because we want to be sure that the person selling is not selling they didn't inflate the price of the house. Like a house is 500,000 because I need extra 100,000. I would tell the person, please add 100,000 to that house so that I can get 300,000 when the mortgage comes paid, it gets disbursed. So that way the bank will do an appraisal just to be sure that the house is within that price that is quoted. After that comes through and it's all approved, you'll come in for final document signing. Final document signing is to sign the rates and all that, and see what the payments are, go through the terms and conditions, just to be sure everything is fine with you before you finally take over the house. And after you sign those documents, we will send those documents to your lawyers. So you have to find a lawyer that will help you to finalize everything and register the mortgage and all that. So you need a lawyer too. At this point, thank God we have lawyers in the family. So you can always get the lawyers in the family and I'm sure they will give us discounts on that. Then the next thing to look at is closing costs. So closing costs are literally the fees that the lawyers will charge you, home inspection fees, title insurance, land transfer taxes, and the government registration fees. Usually the bank will tell you to keep 0.5% in Alberta, 0.5% of whatever the purchase price of the house is. So let's say you're buying a house of 500,000, closing cost will be about 2,500 for you. So just keep that. You might not spend up to that, but just keep that for the closing cost. And remember, it also contains the fees the lawyers will charge you as well. After you get your mortgage, now, how do you pay your mortgage loan? We do have some ways you can pay your mortgage faster. And I do tell people, if you make extra income, let's say you get your mortgage when your income was 100,000 and then your income got increased to 150,000. I usually tell people, try and increase your payment amount. At TD where I work, you can double up your mortgage amount without penalties at all. So let's say your mortgage is $1,000, you can pay $2,000. And what happens is that the extra $1,000 you're paying goes directly into your principal. So there's no interest in that. And that's the fastest way to save on paying mortgage interest rate. I wish I can show us the amortization of what you pay in 25 years on a mortgage. Even if you look at it at 2%, you'll have paid almost $300,000 to the bank as interest if you decide to let your mortgage wait for 25 years. So, but if you're doing this prepayments and double up payments, that helps you reduce your interest amount and pay your mortgages faster. I've seen people who paid down their mortgage in 5 years. So, I mean, I pray that God will give us the strength to do that too, but it's important. It's a decision. You have to prioritize your mortgage. You don't want to keep mortgage payments for as long as 25 years if you can afford to pay it better. Ways, again, is prepayments. We have prepayments. So prepayments allow you to pay. Some banks allow you to pay up to 20%. Some will say 10%. Where I work, we allow you to put 15% prepayments down. So 15% of your mortgage can be paid down every calendar year. So if your mortgage is 400,000, 15% of that, that's about 60,000. So 60,000 every calendar year, you can pay it into your mortgage with no penalties. And it goes directly into your principal amount. So if your mortgage amount is 400,000, if you put 60,000 into it, your mortgage amount will be 340,000 immediately. Other things you can do is the frequency of your payments. So I do tell people, most people don't know the importance of frequency of payments. So because I pay my rent every month, I want my mortgage to be every month. That's not a wise idea. Why? Because the interest amount is based on your balance. So let's say you pay once in a month. That means once in a month, you're reducing your principal amount. That means you're paying interest on the balance remaining. But if I do it, let's say biweekly, apart from biweekly, it throws in more amounts into the mortgage, because if you're doing biweekly, that means you're paying 26 payments in a year. Whereas if you're doing monthly, you're doing 12 months in a year, which the 26 has already given you an extra 1 month you're hiding into your mortgage, which will reduce your payment faster for you and also save you in interest. I've seen people who decide to do weekly as well. There's not so much difference between weekly and biweekly, but there is a bit of difference between biweekly and monthly. Anybody who wants a question about that and wants me to show them proof on that, you can call me anytime and I'll show you a proof of that so that you can see how much you're saving if you change to weekly or biweekly. And that's hence about mortgages. I don't know if you want to ask questions on mortgages before I go into investment, or you want me to finish everything. Okay, questions on mortgages. Okay, yeah, you can go ahead.
Praise the Lord.
Hallelujah.
I have a question on mortgage. People have a lot of issues with joint mortgage. Did not say anything about that, but I have a question about joint mortgage. Maybe you and somebody agreed to get a mortgage, and you agreed that, okay, you will pay this part, I will be doing this part. And you are doing your own part very well, but the other person is not doing his or her part at all. Just doing up and down, and the credit is really getting so bad, and you cannot afford the whole thing. So in that case, what is the solution, or what is the advice?
Thank you. Yes. So the way the bank sees it is, Once two people come together and sign an agreement for a mortgage, the bank doesn't really care whether one person is paying or whether one other person is not paying. And that's why even if you look at your credit file, it will not show half payment. It will show full payment on your credit file because the bank believes that both of you or either of you must make that payment. And I've seen so many of those situations happen, even in marriage, that husbands and wife, I've seen so many that the wife will refuse to say they're not paying mortgages and there's nothing the bank can do. The only way around it is if you can pay off that person off. So you can bring in another person to sign. We can add any person or take any person out on a mortgage at any point in time. So if I have a mortgage with my brother and my brother is not paying, so all we can do is calculate what equity we've built. We've built equity of 20,000. If I can pay him 10,000 and discharge that person off the mortgage and bring somebody else into the mortgage that can qualify together with us, that's the best thing we can do. But if you say you don't want to do anything and you just wait, it's going to kill your credit. And the bank doesn't care. If you keep paying off, it will wreck one's credit. And then at the end of the day, the bank will sell the house. At the end of it, it's going to be a loss for you. So I usually advise people, and when banks sell the house, forget it. You're getting anything, nothing out of it. Even if the house is worth 500,000, the bank might sell it for 450. So, I mean, because the bank is, we call something for sale value and not the value of the market value of the house. The bank is just going to sell it at a for sale value because they want the money as fast as possible. And that's all they care. As long as it pays the mortgage off, they don't care about what else equity you have in it. So I usually tell people, it's better before it worsens, do something. If we can't find somebody else to co-sign to come into the mortgage and discharge, then the best thing is sell the house before issues start starting. Sell the house at your own terms and get your equity out, save it, and wait when you can build more income and buy another house. It's always better that way.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, please. Any other questions?
Hi, I have a question. My question is for young adults who are thinking about the future and buying a house in the future. What are some things that we can start working on right now, or ways that we can start preparing, say if you want to buy a house in the next 5 years, sometime in the next 5 years?
Fantastic. I like that question. I really encourage younger people to start looking at buying a house. I know in Canada, it's not the ethic, it's not the norm to see young people. I remembered a 21-year-old lady coming over to my office one day and he said he wants to buy a house. And I was like, do you have somebody that is going to co-sign with you? And they were like, no, they're just buying it themselves. And she eventually bought a house worth $500,000. I was impressed. And she wasn't going to live in the house. She was still living with the parents. She wanted to rent the house so that she can make more income out of it. It's a smart thing for kids to start looking at that direction too. It's very important. What are those things you need to start looking at? First, the most important thing is your credit. If you don't have a credit card, get a credit card and start using it and make sure you pay as of when due. Don't wait till, don't miss payments because that's what will wreck your credit. Start spending and paying as much as you can pay immediately. So I tell people that to build your credits on a credit card, the best thing is don't use more than 20% of your limits. So if your credit card has a limit of 5,000, make sure you don't use at any time more than 20% before you pay back. You can go as high as 40%, but the best way is don't exceed the 20% mark once you start going 40, 50%, you start altering your credit. Most people don't know this, but it's the truth. Because what the bank will see is that you're spending more than, you're getting yourself into trouble because this is the limit. So that means you're depending on the credit card more than your salary. So you need to build your credit. That's the first thing. The second thing you need to do is to start saving. Somebody that starts saving 10 years before whatever their goals are will save better than somebody starting 1 year. The time is a lot of difference. So you can start saving. Open a tax-free account if you're not working, because an RSP might not be so much beneficiary for you if you're not working or making good income. I tell people, if you're not making over 50,000, RSP might not give you a very, very good advantage like that. But doesn't mean you can't save RSP, but it means that if you can afford to go into tax-free, it might be a better advantage for you. So you can open a tax-free account and start saving gradually. Remember that your tax-free account has a limit as well. So you have to consider what the limit is. I wouldn't bother to talk about it now. We'll talk about it in the next slides. And so those two things are the important things. Once you start those two things, then we can build around it. Also, investing what you're putting into your tax-free is also important, because a tax-free account, as you know, you are not paying taxes on the income you make on it. So you want to maximize the use of your tax-free, not just putting it into cash. And while we talk about investment, I'll talk about the options around that as well. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome.
Oh, praise God.
Praise God. Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, I want to thank you for your presentation. I think maybe we should limit ourselves to mortgage today because of time.
Okay.
But we look at another time when we look at investment and other topics you may want to give to us. But I still want us to use maybe the next 5 minutes or thereabout to be able to entertain more questions on the issue of mortgage. Please, brethren, if you are having any concern, let's raise it now, so that we can be able to get more advice from our brother. God bless you. Please, if you have more questions or things you want clarification on regarding this, please let's ask.
I have a question. You mentioned something about gifts, down payment. I want to if you can clarify more on the gifts aspect.
Okay, good. Yes, I can talk about down payment again. So to simplify what down payment is just what you're putting into the house. So the bank will not give you all the money. It's just like you want to buy a new car, and then you go to the dealer, they tell you to put $3,000 down. That is literally what your down payment is for the car. So the same way for the car, the house. When you're buying your home, they need you to put something, because anything you don't put anything into, then your interest, you won't have full attention to it. So if the bank just gives me a house and they tell me to be paying $1,000 every month, I don't care if the house, if anything happens to the house, I'll just run away. So that's why the down payment is a must. The bank wants to know that, are you committed to this goal? Do you really want to buy a house? And that's the reason why when you put 20% down, the bank listens to you even more and waive some conditions, because they know that if you have put the $100,000 down, you cannot walk away. You would stay in the house. Even if things are not good, you will still survive. You force yourself to make sure. So there was a time in the 80s in the US where house prices went down. It didn't get that bad in Canada, but in the US, that mortgages were like double the value of the houses. Like, I have a mortgage of $300,000, and even if I want to sell my house, it's $150,000. So people could actually run away and just leave the house. They would just come to the bank and drop their keys to the house. Just have it. We don't want it again, and walk away. So that's one of the reasons why down payments have become very serious now. And they are not waiving down payment for any reason, because your equity is very important. So it's just your share into the house. The minimum you can put in a down payment is 5%. You can do anything. You can put 80% down if you have the money. I've seen people do 60, 70% down payment. So it's as much as you can put. And that helps you reduce your mortgage amount, reduces the payments. And so if you put 5% down, so anything between 5% to 19.99%, the bank must insure it. Because why? The bank wants to make sure that the mortgage price does not go down below the purchase price. Most of people who bought houses in last 3, 4, 5 years, even 10 years, so many of them are seeing that their mortgage amount is almost the same thing as their purchase price of the house right now, because markets have gone down. And that's one of the real advantages I'm telling people. This is a time to buy a house. If anybody is not planning it yet, this is the ideal time. You want to buy your house now. We expect markets to still go down between now and the next few months. But if you're not planning, please start planning. It's very important. You might never get this opportunity in a lifetime. I've been asking people who have been in the banking industry in Canada for a longer time. Rates are going terrible. We expect rates to even go as low as 1.5 or to 1%. I have people who are in variable rates that right now, I have a customer that is in 0.65% variable rates on their mortgages right now. It's nobody has ever had somebody pay 0.65% on a mortgage. But it's true. Those things are happening. And that's why it's important for us to take advantage of it, to do it now. And when you lock in your rate for the next 5 years, if you want, will not change. So even if rate goes back to 4%, 3%, you still keep paying the same rate that you're paying. So that's one of the reasons why I'm encouraging everybody that it's time to look into your mortgage. Go to your bankers, go to your brokers, go get your mortgage now. You'll be shocked that you can still afford to buy a good house with what your income is. So as I was saying, 5%, if you're putting 5% down, up to 19.99%, the bank will have to insure the mortgage. So we call mortgage insurance. Mortgage, we call it mortgage default insurance. As the name says, default. When you default, the insurance pays. So if you put 5% down payment, your insurance premium will be the highest. As you increase your down payments, the insurance amount reduces, up till when it's 20% down payment, and then your insurance is zero, and then you don't have to insure the house. So the down payment sources, as I said, your bank account, even if it's a bank account in Nigeria, yes, we will use that. As long as we know that when you bring the money in, the equivalence will count. So you have to wire the money to your account in Canada at least 30 days before you buy the house, so that we can be sure that that amount corresponds to what we calculated it with. Then you can use your investment accounts, RSPs, TFSAs, unregistered account, you can use any of them. You can use gifts from people. So your parents can give you a gift. Your brother, your uncle, usually we restrict it to close family members, but we can still get exceptions to use friends and all that at some instances. We can use your RRSP, as I spoke about. You can use sale of real estate property, unsecured credits, proceeds from your business, your company, the affordable housing program I spoke about, the first-time home buyers as well, and inheritance, trust funds, and all that, etc. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Praise the Lord.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, just a quick question. Regarding the RRSP, is it possible for someone to use a locked-in RRSP for down payment?
To use what?
Locked-in RRSP.
Okay. So there are restrictions to locked-in RRSP. So why? Because for people who don't know what locked-in RRSPs are, so they are like, let's say you worked in a place and you have a pension systems or an RSP that you cannot use until you retire or at a certain age. That is what a locked-in RRSPs are. So you can't access it like the normal RRSPs. When you have that, you have to unlock it first. There are various ways to unlock it. Definitely not that you want to buy a house. They won't unlock it based on that. But there are things like somebody lost their jobs, you can unlock it. You're not making so much money again, you can unlock it. So it's only once they're already unlocked that you can use the money for the RRSP first time home buyers. You cannot use locked in at all.
Thank you.
There's another thing I didn't mention. So there's another way you can get a mortgage using your RRSP. So we call something arm's length RRSP mortgage and non-arm's length. So this is for people who have huge amounts in their RRSPs. Let's say I have like 300,000, 400,000 in my RRSPs. I can actually use my RRSPs for my mortgage. What we do is that we get your mortgage and there's the money in your RRSP we're using for the mortgage without you taking the money out of your RRSPs. So what it means is the interest from that mortgage will be going into your RRSPs. And the bank will just use the RRSP as like a security for your mortgage. That's all. So that's another way people, but usually it's for people who already have a huge amount in the RRSPs that make use of that. So it's not so common. Most people are not aware about that. But if you do have a huge RRSPs, let me know and I can guide you around how to do that as well.
Just a quick question. Are RRSPs managed by the government or by a bank?
So RRSP is called Registered Retirement Savings Plan. So they are managed by you, managed by the bank. So you can even have your RRSP in your self-directed account. So I can open a self-directed account and have my RRSPs and I'll manage it myself. So nobody really manages it except you go for a mutual fund. So it's the products in the RRSPs that are managed by the bank or can be managed by you. The only thing we do is we report it to the government. It's because you cannot over contribute into your RRSPs. So if you over contribute, there's a penalty. There's an exemption of $2,000. So you can over contribute up to $2,000. Anything over that, you're going to be paying 1% penalty every month on the over contribution. So RRSP is majorly managed by you. You can put any product under it. So far, it's a product that is acceptable in an RRSP. Not everything you can put in an RRSP. You can buy stocks. You can buy GRCs. You can keep it in a savings account. Every possible thing in your TFSAs, you can almost do everything in your RRSPs. So it's not like the bank manages it. We can manage the products you have on it, but not like we're managing the RRSPs. You control your RRSPs. If you want to put $10,000, the bank will tell you not to. We will not say you shouldn't. So you kind of manage it, but the products we have under it, where your RRSP is invested in, is what the bank can manage. The government never manages it at all, except you're reporting it. We just report it to the government. And you can also have an RRSP at your workplace, so you don't have to even have it at a bank. So many workplaces allow you to have an RRSP under them. So you can also have it at your workplace and be contributing into the RRSPs at your workplace. In fact, this at times, it might be the best option for most people because some organizations will match up what you contribute. You put 50%, they match 50% for you and all that. So you might need to ask about your employers and find out what they do what advantages you get if you have an RRSPs or TFSAs under that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions?
I was going to ask that too, that do we have more questions because of our time?
We should just feel free. No matter what the question is, there's no question that looks not so good. Just ask the question. Anything you're not familiar with, I can help you at the best of my abilities. Even if there's something that I need to read about or question or ask people, I can do that. No man is an island. And if there's anybody here who has any contribution, because I've just been in Canada for like 3 to 4 years, some people have been here for 20 years, and I feel experience is the best teachers. Everybody, I mean, we could have passed through a way or find a way around getting a mortgage that I probably don't even know about. So if there's any contribution, if there's anything somebody want to talk about, please feel free.